This is your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment of the program, the topic is, and drones, unmanned aircraft. We're going to be talking about the Federal Aviation Administration's new regulations for the commercial flying of drones and other areas of drones. My guests are Edward Page, a certified criminal law trial advocate by the National Board of Trial Advocacy, a Florida Supreme Court certified circuit court mediator, a commercial pilot and flight instructor, partner in the Tampa, Florida law firm of Carlton Fields, Jordan and Burt. My other guest is Ron Rohde, a patent law attorney, arbitrator for the Better Business Bureau's Lemon Law Disputes, an instrument-rated private pilot, and he's represented pilots before the FAA with a law office in Palo Alto, California. This segment of Your Legal Rights is made possible by the National Board of Trial Advocacy. Additional funding for the program is made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. For those of you listening to the live program, and we're doing this on the evening of Wednesday evening, October 26th, this is our monthly Call a Lawyer night. We do it every month, where you can speak with attorneys off the air from 7 to 8 p.m. California time, 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. For workers' compensation issues, Alice O'Sullivan, the certified specialist, will be available until 8 p.m. California time, 510-333-3314, 510-333-3314. For criminal law, Jeff Hayden is a certified specialist. He's chair of the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. Landlord-tenant law, Sal Timpano. Employment law, Charles Wish. Tax law, real estate. He's also a real estate broker, Frank Adam. And if you're being chased by creditors, Leon Baer will talk with you tomorrow, Thursday, October 27th, from 9 a.m. to noon on his 800 number, and I'll let you know more about that. I'm very pleased to have you, Ed, and Ron with me on the program. You know, there's something very interesting. Can you hear me okay, by the way, Ed?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, you sound good. You sound good. You sound like you're not in Florida. It sounds like you're right here. Very nice to have you here. By the way, as something that is really ironic, this is tonight the second game of the World Series. And apparently yesterday, the Cleveland Indians pitcher, Trevor Bauer, was assembling a drone, and he nicked his finger and couldn't pitch. Would you guys talk a little bit about this? How can someone, he's an engineer also, is he not?
Yes, it actually happened a few days ago.
Oh, pardon
me. He was assembling a drone. He's a mechanical engineer by education. But he's the starting pitcher in tonight's game, second World Series game, which, as we are speaking, is midway, I think, in the sixth inning, with the Cubs ahead. The Indians won last night, but Trevor was unable to pitch last night, Trevor Bauer, because he, when assembling the drone and powering it up, he injured his right pinky finger and couldn't pitch last night, so he was held out.
So here's a mechanical engineer who gets injured by a drone.
Well, I was a mechanical engineer for years, and I can't count the number of injuries I've had. I've been even put in the hospital by machine, so that's not unusual.
Oh, my. Well, let's do this. You know, we're coming on in the holiday season, not too far. Time is going much too fast. We're going to have Christmas. We're going to have parents thinking about buying drones for their kids. I'd like you both to talk a little bit about what should parents be thinking about in terms of if they really think they want to do this.
Well, one of the first things is that the parents have to realize that this is a wonderful educational device, and it's great for getting kids into aviation. And the drone pilots of today will be the airline pilots of tomorrow. On the other hand, this is not a toy. It's going to take a certain amount of consideration and caution and learning of the national airspace and the airspace around your home before you go operate this. In other words, the kids can't simply open up the package Christmas Eve and take it out Christmas morning in the backyard and start playing with it. There are some things that they have to be very careful of. First thing they have to do is they need to register the drone.
With what? With whom?
With the FAA.
Federal Aviation Administration.
Yes. They can go online. There's an online website that the FAA has established for registering the drones. You'll need a credit card because it costs $5, but it's virtually instantaneous. You can have that done in a matter of minutes, and then you mark your drone with the registration number, and you're at least legal to fly the drone outside. Now, you can fly the drone inside legally all you want.
When you say inside, like in a big auditorium or someplace like that?
Well, or even in your living room if it's a very small drone.
And
also this applies to drones that are over or about 0.44 pounds or heavier. If it's less than 0.44 pounds, which I think works out to about a half a kilogram, then you can fly the drone without registering it.
Well, how big dimension-wise would a 0.44 pound drone be?
Well, it could be very big if it was styrofoam, but
it
weighs less than about 7 ounces.
Okay.
So even if you go out into the backyard, you still need to figure out whether or not your backyard is a place that you can legally fly a drone. If you're within 5 miles of an airport, then you need to, at the very least, notify the airport that you're going to be flying the drone in within 5 miles and let them know where you are, how far away you are, when you're going to fly it, what time you're going to start, what time you'll be done. And at least I would call them up and give them an opportunity to at least tell you, well, that's not a good idea because we have some aircraft over there, or, yeah, sure, go ahead. Now, I've done this with a couple of different airports, and they've both said, yep, sure, just go right ahead, let us know when you're done, and they were very happy. But an airport also could include a heliport near you or an unused airport, and you have to find out who the owner of that is and contact them.
Like a heliport would be, for example, where you have a hospital and helicopters are landing on the top of a building or somewhere close.
Is that
what you're talking about?
Or a fire department.
A fire department, okay.
Or a police station, for that matter.
I see.
But, Chuck, what this goes to, though, is you see how Ron's already talked probably about 5 or 6 little distinct rules. And your average person, you know, he and I are both lawyers and have been lawyering a long time. So it's important to remember that the FAA at faa.gov has a great website devoted to unmanned aircraft systems, or drones, as we're calling them in today's show. And that's a good repository of information for the person, the parent, or the adult, actually, because not only do we expect a lot of drone purchases for children and the like over the next few months, but adults will be giving them too.
Well, yeah, adult children will get a lot of these.
Yeah, earlier today, we've had 500,000 drones registered, like Ron has said, since December of 2015.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, 500,000. So, but the thing is, where do I look for this information, you know, besides listening to this show and trying to educate yourself a little bit? But that's FAA.gov,
and
their section on drones.
There are a couple more places you can look for this information. One is AOPA.org.
What is that?
That stands for Aircraft Owners and Pilots Association, which is an advocacy group for aviation. They now have some websites dedicated to this. Another place is an organization called the Academy of Model Aeronautics, or AMA. They're an organization for safety and operation of model aircraft. It's sort of the model aircraft organization of the U.S. They have a lot of information and safety codes, rules, regulations that you can study.
Ed, you have, I know, a very substantial portion of your legal practice doing aviation law. What thoughts do you have, for example, if we have, if a parent or parents buy a drone for their child, whatever the age may be, what do you think the parents should be thinking about in terms of, let's say the child goes out into the backyard and flies this thing and loses control over it and it crashes into the next-door neighbor's home. Do you have some thoughts about what how parents should be preparing their children for flying these things or having liability insurance? Or what thoughts do you have about this?
Well, you've just hit several of them already, but Ron and I are active pilots, so my perspective is from a pilot's perspective, I'm worried about colliding with one of these drones.
Yeah.
And going back to your question, we always want to have parental supervision over this. This is not something that you hand the child and say, go have a good time and come back and tell me what you did. This has to be parental supervision. There's generally a 400-foot height requirement, but, if you just go on YouTube and
let me stop you there. When you say a 400-foot height limitation, you mean you have to fly it under 400 or over 400?
Under 400.
Under 400.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So, and drones can get out of control. They're machines. They're imperfect. You can lose control, and they can fly out of sight and out of your area. And so, I think I would go back and just harp on adult supervision. And yes, there are liability issues as well. If you collide into your neighbor's house, or they land on a car, scratch the car, break a window. We don't want to be doomsdayers, but these are situations that can arise on just a moment's notice. So you got to be careful out there and have good adult supervision. You probably want to start training in a big open field, not near anything that could be damaged.
Hold on.
Ron has already said you can't fly them over people.
Yeah. Bear with me just a minute, Ed and Ron. I'm going to do a little break for just a moment. For those of you who are listening to the live program, we're doing our monthly Call a Lawyer night. We're doing this on Wednesday, October 26th. If you want to talk to one or more of the attorneys who are here, 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. For workers' compensation law, Alice O'Sullivan is a certified specialist. She has a special number, 510-333-3314, 510-333-3314. She'll be available until 8 p.m. California time. At the station, we have Jeff Hayden for criminal law, Sal Timpano for landlord-tenant law, Charles Wish for employment law, and for tax law, real estate, we have Frank Adams. So that's 1-800-525-9917. So let me ask you this, Ed, please, since you do so much aviation law, and Ron is very much involved with this and has represented people before the FAA, pilots before the FAA, should, practically speaking, if a parent is going to consider seriously buying a drone for a child, should they not check with their insurance carrier, their homeowner's insurance carrier or whatever it may be, that's what I would do, to see whether or not there's any coverage or if there is any rider that can be placed on their policy in the event that there may be, let's say, some decent potential for that there being some problem? What would you say, Ed?
I would say, that pilots love checklists.
Yeah.
And they fly using a checklist, and that should be on the parent's first checklist item before they even purchase. How am I going to ensure for a potential, operation, whether it's my child or my own, and what's it cost, and what's covered, and does my homeowners cover this, or do I need to buy special insurance through some provider?
What recommendation do both of you have as to how a parent should go about, or let's say someone, even an adult, who say, oh, gee, I want to have some fun with a drone. I'm not a pilot. I've never flown an airplane. I've maybe been a passenger on an airplane, but I'd love to have my own drone. What kind of recommendation do you have for either the adult who's just starting out with a drone, him or herself, or the parent who's buying one for their kids, Ron?
Well, I would say that you want to take this rather seriously. I would encourage parents to look into drones for their children, for their kids, certainly teenagers, and the adult kids out there too. But you have to take it seriously. This is more like buying a motorcycle or something like that for a person than it is like buying a bicycle. So there are potential, there are rules of the road for a motorcycle. There are things that can be damaged. You can hurt other people. You can hurt yourself with a motorcycle a lot more than with a bicycle. So you have to maybe approach this like the same way as you would approach buying a motorcycle, but definitely look into it. And it's also something that you should consider if it is kids, that you will plan to spend some time with them. Look at this as a potential bonding experience between parents and children. And look into the rules of the sky in this case. Now, there are some training programs that are available, certainly in the Bay Area. Tradewinds Aviation down at Reed Hillview Airport has a training program that you can look into if you want to get a drone license and start taking photos or video for hire. So, but it would be also a very good program just to learn how to operate the drone safely. And, of course, look into the Model Aircraft Association, and they have a lot of materials and online, and as Ed has mentioned, the FAA.gov.
Ed, let me ask you this. With respect to, let's say, anyone operating a drone, especially a child, is there any legal requirement that the child wear a helmet?
I don't think there is. But that's a good point. You know, sometimes glasses are appropriate.
Uh-huh.
A helmet might be appropriate. Adult supervision, other, you know, protective measures. Look what happened to Trevor Bauer, you know.
Right,
he
right, yeah.
Cut his finger or right. injured his finger, kept him out of a World Series ball game. So these are, you know, these are important issues to think about before you let your child, depending on their age and their level of maturity, you know, operate one by themselves.
Is there an age, Ron, an age limitation on who can fly a drone?
If for flying for fun and profit, that is commercially to become licensed, you have to be at least 16.
Mm-hmm.
And that's under a new FAA rule that was went into effect on August 29.
It's, this year.
Of this year.
Yeah.
It's referred to as Part 107. So that allows people who qualify and obtain a license, you have to take a test and study for it, prepare for it. But once you have a license, if you're 16, you can get that license. For recreational model purposes, I am not aware of an age limit. So, again, this would be under the supervision of an adult, and I would expect parents to supervise their minor children in this activity.
What about this?
Yeah, most states, Chuck, and this is important, have statutes that make parents liable for the conduct of their children.
Yes.
So it may just seem like, well, I don't have any liability or potential liability, you know, for my son or daughter's drone operation, but that's not necessarily so.
How would a parent go about wherever he or she or they are located in whether it's California or any other state in the United States, how would they go about determining how to find out what you're talking about there, Ed? Where would they go for this? Can you give us an idea?
Yeah, well, my recommendation, for example, Ron, you know, who's on the call with us, is a member of the AOPA Legal Services Panel. And you could call AOPA and ask for a lawyer in that parent's area so that they could find out and speak with an aviation lawyer. Most lawyers don't know about what we're, you know, talking
sure,
about
of course.
If you don't practice and just deal with aviation on a daily basis.
Ron, AOPA, is that a national organization?
That's a national organization. Again, it's the Aircraft Operators and Pilots Association.
Do you know the website on that?
It's aopa.org.
Okay, well, that's pretty simple. aopa.org, and then the Federal Aviation Administration is faa.gov. So there you have, everyone, a couple of different organizations, actually the federal government as well as a private organization, to get some good information. Here's something that is a question that was brought in to me, and I know that when you were on the program last year, Ed, we talked quite a bit about this, and the question is this. The proliferation of drones causes privacy issues. Are there limitations on using drones to spy on friends, family, or anyone? Ed, could you respond to that initially?
Sure. Well, you know, we all have a right to privacy. It's guaranteed by state and federal law. But this new Part 107 doesn't speak to how close someone can operate a drone to potentially invade another's privacy.
Mm-hmm.
Those are all going to be left up to cases that are brought in state court around the country to define those limits about how close you can come to your neighbor's backyard and how low you can go. We talked about the height requirement, you know, nothing higher than 400 feet.
Mm-hmm.
But how low can you go? You see, the drone, the 107 rule doesn't say how low you can go or how near. They left that for us, our state legislatures across the nation, to set the boundaries there and through cases and the like.
What are you finding, Ed, with respect to legislatures throughout the country? Are they active in coming forward with some kind of laws with respect to drones, or are they perhaps still not active enough?
I think some are active and some are inactive. Mm-hmm. Florida, for example, a few years ago enacted a drone surveillance, you know, statute that keeps law enforcement from using drones to conduct surveillance that might invade someone's privacy. There are restrictions on that.
Mm-hmm.
But they still, like many states, even in Florida and dozens of other states, have enacted no regulations that define, you know, can I operate my drone over your backyard when you're out in the swimming pool? Can I, you know, hover over a crime scene at 200 feet if I'm not interfering with anybody?
I see.
And on, the scenarios are just, you know, limitless.
Let me throw this one out to you then. Let's say someone who knows nothing about this, like me, I'm not a pilot, I don't have a drone. I'm a drone on, as most people know, but I am not a pilot. What about this? Someone, whether this is an adult or a child, gets a drone, has it assembled, and it's ready to fly, goes out in the backyard. What's the problem there, at least in California? What's the problem there, if there is one?
There may not be a problem, but there may also be a problem. It depends on where you are. Mm-hmm. If you're out in the countryside, there's probably not a problem. If you are in the city, in the Bay Area, for example, it's very difficult to find places where it's legal to fly without getting permission or without getting notifying the airports, because there's so many airports around here.
I see.
There's also we're in an interesting area where much of the coastline along here is also forbidden to drone flight.
Really?
Without going
along the beach area?
Along the beach area, because it's protected area, protected by the the fishing, the fish, the wildlife.
Fishing game,
So there's that also.
Wow.
But in terms of what Ed was saying, if you were to fly the drone over your neighbor's pool while somebody was in there swimming, that would probably annoy the neighbor.
Yeah.
The neighbor would then call the police. The police would then take a report, which would get back to the FAA, and then the FAA would investigate and say, this is interesting. Is your drone registered? Mm-hmm. And if it's not, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
Did you fly it over the pool? Yes. Well, then you flew over a person. Now you've violated a federal aviation regulation.
So you can't fly a drone over a person.
You cannot fly over a person. Because it's a statute. You simply cannot fly over a person. But the reason is that if the drone were to suddenly lose power, it could fall on them. So the FAA would this investigation would probably start showing up a number of violations of the rules and regulations of the sky, and you would be subject to a fine of up to $25,700.
Whoa!
So it's doing something like this where you're flying over your neighbor's house is inviting an investigation by the FAA. And if you don't know what you're doing, it's very probable that you've violated some regulations without even knowing it.
Any thoughts on that?
What happens next, Chuck, is if there's a camera on the drone, and most of these are, you know, we're flying not to so much to fly like an airplane, but we're taking pictures with this, and then the next issue is, what do we do with them? Do we put them on Facebook? Are they on LinkedIn? Are they on Instagram? What are they doing? And that's kind of sharing the violation of privacy with the world, you see. And that's what yields yet another layer of problems here that can unfold.
You're sort of advertising the fact that you've just broken the regulations, and then, again, you can be investigated.
Boy, that's really, really something.
Yeah, the take-home message here is learn about the airspace, where you can fly, where you cannot fly, and come to some kind of understanding of what you can and cannot do with these. And this takes a certain amount of serious consideration and investigation.
What if you have, generally speaking, what if you have, there's a park, and I'm not talking about close to the coastline, but it's a city or county or state park, and you're thinking, gee, I want to go to the park. There's all this grass here and open space, and I want to fly my drone. What do you say about that?
That's a really good idea. You're out in the middle of some countryside. As long as you're not flying over other people, as long as this is not a federal park, or I'm not even sure about California state parks. They might have some rules against drone flying in California parks.
What if it's a city park?
Then it should be no problem.
As long as you're not flying it over people. Now, what does that mean? I mean, at any park that we might go to, there are people all over the park. So what's the limitation there, flying over people?
Well, certainly if you're directly above somebody, then you're flying over them.
Well, sure.
Consider if you're up in the air, and if the aircraft were to lose power, could it fall on somebody that's below? And then you're probably over them.
So that's the thing. Could it fall on somebody? Ed, do you have any thoughts on that? We're getting close to the... If I may interrupt for just a moment, we're getting close to the statewide version of the program in California. We record this first half hour, and then we send it out to 15 other stations in California. We continue, though, for a full hour, both in the San Francisco Bay Area on the Internet at www.klw.org, and, of course, the program is uplinked to the NPR satellite. So, Ed, very, very briefly, any brief comments about following up what Ron just said?
Oh, sure. Well, 107, you know, is pretty plain on its face here. Just as you may not operate over any persons not directly participating in the operation, and you can't operate under a covered structure. All right, so I'm in a, let's say, a football stadium.
Let me cut you off there.
Okay.
All right. Those of you who are listening to the live program, we're doing this on Wednesday evening. This is October 26th. And we're doing our monthly Call a Lawyer night, where you can talk with attorneys off the air. We do this every month, usually the fourth Wednesday of the month. No obligation on your part. These are attorneys who like to be of help to you. The number is 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. If you have questions for my guests on the air, and I'll tell you who they are again in just a minute, we have a toll-free number that you can call, 866-798-8255, wherever you may be in the United States, 866-798-8255, if you want to talk with my guests on the air. And they are Ed Page, who is a certified criminal law trial advocate by the National Board of Trial Advocacy. He's a pilot. This is the second time he's been on the program this program. My other guest is Ron Rohde, who's a great friend of this program. Ron has been on a guest several times. He's also been here for Call a Lawyer Night, and Ron has his office in Palo Alto. Ed has his office in Tampa, Florida. And let me tell you for Call a Lawyer who we have here, because I appreciate their wanting to be of help to you. For workers' compensation law issues, Alice O'Sullivan, certified specialist. She'll be available until 8 p.m. California time, 510-333-3314, 510-333-3314. For criminal law, Jeff Hayden is here. He's chair of the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. Landlord-tenant law, Sal Timpano. Employment law, Charles Wish. Tax law, real estate law. He's also a real estate broker, Frank Adam. And tomorrow, if you are being chased or whatever by creditors, Leon Baer, who's a certified specialist in bankruptcy law, will be available to talk with you tomorrow, Thursday, October 27th, from 9 a.m. to noon, California time. His number, 1-800-477-3111, 1-800-477-3111. If you call and have to get his voice message, leave your name, your phone number, tell him you're a listener of Your Legal Rights, and Leon will call you back. Support for KLW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation in both San Francisco and Marin County. For a referral to a lawyer or the Bay Area Mediation Services Program of the San Francisco Bar, call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. If you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own at 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. If you're in any other county in California, every county has a Bar Association and a lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours. They will do their best to find someone who's experienced in the area that you need some help on. And with minor exception in California, for a half an hour consultation with an attorney, you'll pay between $25 and $35. And that money does not go to the lawyer. It goes to the lawyer referral service to keep that going. It's a great public service. Additional funding for your legal rights is made possible by the, what do we got here? The Trust and Estate section of the State Bar, the Family Law section of the State Bar, the Labor and Employment Law section of the State Bar of California, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and the San Mateo County Bar Association. And so what we're going to do now is we're going to take our first call, and that is Kerwin. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thanks.
Hi, you're on the air. Go ahead.
I thank you very much for taking my call. I work for a drone manufacturer here in the Bay Area, Mota Group, Inc., and wanted to just add one more resource for your listeners. There's an organization called Know Before You Fly.
K-N-O-W, Before You Fly, okay.
K-N-O-W, Before You Fly, .com. It's sponsored by the FAA, as well as the AMA that you mentioned earlier, and a third user group, the AUVSI. It's a great resource for people, you know, whether they're commercial pilots or just individuals looking to start out, you know, with a Christmas gift for how to fly safely and responsibly. So just so people know that.
That's terrific, Kerwin. Thank you very much for that information. Thanks very much for calling. Hedy, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you.
Hi.
I have a brief question, and I have a comment.
Sure.
How much do these things cost?
Stop for a moment. Let me get an answer. Ed, what's your experience with how much these things cost?
I bought one for my nephew about a year ago for $19.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay.
But you can spend hundreds of dollars, but you'll see them in the hobby magazines now. You can buy good ones for under $100.
Really?
A little bit more than 50, but under 100.
Wow.
Okay. So cost is not an issue that I'm concerned about. I have a lot of concerns about drones, particularly as they are used militarily, and they trouble me greatly. And I really don't see, given all the contingencies that your guests have mentioned, and I certainly respect their expertise and thank you for having them, why anyone would buy something like that for a child under the age of 16.
Let me get Ron to respond, because...
Let me just finish.
Sure, of course.
I'm an educator. I have a psychological background. I know a lot about how that age functions, the development of their brains, the lack of impulse control, the lack of prediction of their actions. I would never, ever buy that for anybody between the ages of 13 and 16.
Very interesting. But if someone was 17 or older, you would?
Well, if someone were older than 18, they can buy them for themselves.
Well, sure. As an adult, certainly. That's true. Well, Hedy, thank you very much. Let me get some comments. I know that Ron would like to respond to your thought about buying something for a child who's under 17, let's say 17 or under. Turn your radio back up if you would, and I'm very pleased that you called. Ron, what thoughts do you have for Hedy?
Oh, of course, I would buy something for this for a child 13, 12, 10, if I planned to spend time with them and educate them on the use of the device.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are children who are mature enough to fly airplanes, and I've seen them fly them, and they do a very good job. There are kids that you would never want to put into an airplane, and you'd never want to let them loose in an airplane.
Mm-hmm.
But this is not, I think we've tried to make the point, this is not something you get for your kids and say, go have fun. This is something you buy in order to spend time educating your kids with this, and think of this as a tool for educating your kids about the airspace and aviation.
Ed, do you have any comments for Hedy?
Well, yes, I totally agree with her, you know, perspective, and I empathize, but I too would find it okay to buy for younger folk if there's adult supervision. I mean, look, we buy, there's model rocketry has been available for, you know, over 50 years.
I see.
And you know, those are explosive devices, but you know, they're done with adult supervision. So this is a great opportunity with drones, like a model rocketry and model airplaning, to spend time with your child, to teach and to educate, and as long as it's done with supervision, I find it okay.
I hope, Hedy, you agree with that. I know that you've turned your radio back up, but I hear some very practical comments coming both from Ron and Ed here. Yes, Ron.
I'd like to point out, as a practical matter, model aircraft have been around for decades and have been flown safely by parents with their kids.
And we're not talking about drones. We're talking about model.
Well, we're talking about model aircraft.
Yeah, right.
As it turns out, what we're referring to as drones, these quadcopters, in some respects are much, much easier to operate and control, and in many respects are safer than the model aircraft, where you actually have to learn how to fly the same way you would an airplane.
Really?
So... But they will still, even though they're simpler, it's sort of like an airplane with training wheels, mm-hmm. you can still learn about the airspace that you're operating in and about aviation.
Mm-hmm. Okay, this is your Legal Rights, everybody. I'm Chuck Finney. We're talking about drones, unmanned aircraft. We're talking about things that you as an adult may want to buy your own drone, or maybe you want to get one for your child or your nephew or whatever. We are doing this program live on October 26th. If you'd like to call in with your question, your comment for my guests, the toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. If you have questions in the areas of either workers' compensation law, Alice O'Sullivan is available until 8 p.m. California time tonight, 510-333-3314, 510-333-3314. If you have questions for other attorneys who are here at the station, on 800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917, and whether it's criminal law, landlord-tenant law, employment law, tax law, they are here right now. If you're being hounded by creditors, Leon Baer, who's a certified specialist in bankruptcy law, will be available tomorrow, Thursday, October 27th, from 9 a.m. to noon, California time, at 800-477-3111. This is a public service these attorneys are performing, and they're very happy to help you, and they enjoy being involved with Call a Lawyer. Do we have Zach here? Are you there? Oh, Zach, go ahead. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call, Chuck.
Sure.
I have two questions, if I may. The first one is, what about tracking the ownership of a particular drone? There was an incident in the Bay Area press recently regarding a media person who he lives in a high rise, and he discovered early one morning with his drapes open that he heard some noise outside his window, and there was a drone out there taking photos of it.
Taking photos of him.
And, you know, who knows who was behind that.
Yeah.
You know, so how would one track the ownership of a drone?
Very good.
And also, my second question is regarding waterfront property in the Bay Area, like maybe Marin County and, you know, residential, or even being in a restaurant and having a drone fly back and forth in front of the restaurant taking photos, or in front of a waterfront home.
Yeah.
You know, what are the laws regarding privacy issues with Bay Area property?
Terrific questions. Let me get some comments for you, Zach, if you turn your radio back
Thank
up. Thank you very much for calling. Ed, you want to start on this one?
Sure, I'll take the first part of it.
Sure.
Zach has already talked about the registration requirement, and that is if there's going to be outside operations, whether, you know, it's for commercial purposes or hobby purposes, you have to register this drone, which means going on FAA.gov, getting a number, and putting that number on your drone. That's how we're going to attach that drone to the person operating it or who owns it.
Is that number supposed to be large enough so that one, if let's say, as Zach was talking about, with this media person, there was a drone outside of his window taking photos of him. Does that number on the drone have to be large enough that someone can make out the number, let's say if the drone is 10 or 15 or even 20 feet from you?
Yeah, no, that's not a requirement.
That's too bad. That's a real mistake.
If it crashes or does something else, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's a real mistake.
We've got these drones that you can hold in your hand, you know, They can't meet that requirement, Chuck.
So
I'll let Ron answer the second one.
Would you do that, the waterfront property, Ron?
Well, yeah. The part of the answer is that it depends. It's state by state. The intentionally intruding on somebody's privacy is a violation of their privacy, and there are rules against that. And simply because you're doing it with a drone or climbing over their fence or climbing up a ladder to look in the window doesn't make any difference. You're still intruding on privacy the same way. So as far as a practical matter, catching somebody doing this, well, it's just as difficult if you're trying to catch a hit-and-run driver and you can, and they're driving away too fast to see their license plate. There are some practical problems here. On the other hand, if you call the police and say, there's this drone out here. It is intruding. It's a nuisance. Come and look into it. What happens is the police show up. They are probably going to be pretty good about finding the operator because the operator is going to be probably within line of sight of that or very close.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll figure out pretty quickly where the operator is. Once they catch the operator, they're going to notify the FAA. And I guarantee you that the FAA, as soon as they start investigating something like that, are going to find lots of violations. If it's not registered, it'll be potentially criminal violations. Even if it is registered and it's as egregious as you describe, the FAA can bring some very heavy-duty fines. As I mentioned, $27,500, but they can start piling on. They can say, well, yeah, and you're doing this, and that's another $27,500, and you're doing that, and that's another $27,500.
So you got to – I mean, the law can be very heavy if you are not being careful.
This is federal law.
Yeah.
And federal law doesn't mess around.
Okay. Here's a question that ties into this that was brought into the studio here. Drones are so easily available, which I think we'll all agree with. What if millions of consumers purchase and fly drones? Does the FAA have the funding and capability to police these millions of drone owners and enforce its regulations? Ed, would you mind starting on that one?
Yes, especially as a former federal prosecutor. The feds, you know, routinely turn away opportunities to enforce federal law because they simply don't have the resources. You know, many aren't unaware of this, but since 9/11, you know, probably a third of the FBI agents are out there doing anti-terrorism intelligence gathering work, not enforcing, so to speak, you know, the laws, bank robbery and other, you know, crimes and the like in the United States. So if this becomes a problem for the FAA, I think, and I believe now, I spoke with the FAA today, that they're going to defer a lot of these problem cases to local law enforcement. It's not really per se an FAA, you know, violation. It's a matter of state law. For example, in Zach's waterfront property question, you know, how close did you come? Were you invading someone's property, privacy? Were you harassing them? What else have you done? The FAA is simply not well equipped to handle that.
So, in other words, if we have someone who's harassing someone else with a drone, the idea, I suppose, wherever you may be, whether it's California or some other state, is to contact, as Ron was saying, contact the local police department and say, hey, there's a problem here. Can you come out and take a look at this? Would you agree with that, Ed?
Yes, I would, and I'd say that it'd be a good idea for Zach and the others listening in here, if you have something like that, to capture it on your iPhone. You know, and make a record of it so that you can, it's just more than words. You have a video or something like that, or a picture of how close that drone came and the like.
Very good. Very good.
What you should not do is try to down that drone, because now this is an aircraft.
Yeah.
Even though somebody's flying it illegally, it's still an aircraft, and it's just as illegal to try to down an aircraft intentionally. So if it falls in your backyard, you can hold it for the police, but you can't just keep it and prevent the other person from getting it back, short of giving it to the police and saying, well, I'm going to give it to the police, and then they can give it back to you if they feel that's appropriate. But you can't simply hold it and say, go away, it's mine now, because that would be conversion.
This is Your Legal Rights. My guests are Ron Rohde. Ron's a patent law attorney, arbitrator for the Better Business Bureau's Lemon Law Disputes. He's an instrument-rated private pilot, has represented pilots before the FAA. His law office is in Palo Alto, California. My other guest in Florida is Ed Page, a certified criminal law trial advocate by the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which is funding this program. He's a Florida Supreme Court certified circuit court mediator. That's quite a title, Ed. My gosh. A commercial pilot and flight instructor. He's a partner in the Tampa, Florida law firm of Carlton Fields, Jordan, and Burt. And for those of you who are listening to the live program, we can still take some calls. The toll-free number, 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. And if you want to talk with any of our Call a Lawyer lawyers, and we do Call a Lawyer Night once a month, usually the fourth Wednesday of the month. We're doing this live tonight, October 26th. That number, 1-800-525-9917. 1-800-525-9917. Henry, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi, how are you doing?
We're doing okay so far.
Yes. I took classes over 40 years ago as a grammar school student. Back in Roseville, California, teacher's name was Mr. Sorensen, and it was an extracurricular activity. We did build, design, and fly U-control, remote control, string flight, free flight, gas, and jet. airplanes, helicopters, planes, boats. We did that, and they wasn't given the title drones. Mm-hmm. It was just recently, it was since 2000 after 9/11, then there was a call for people with experience because apparently there was no college-style curriculum for it.
How old were you, Henry? How old were you at the time that you were doing this?
I was 10 years older.
10 years. 10 years old.
It was just at Kaysburg School there in Roseville.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Teacher's name was Mr. Sorensen.
Yeah.
There was and at Warren T. Ike, we did the same thing at the school there. It was always a controlled and supervised area,
mm-hmm.
and it was always away from not necessarily city limits, but anywhere that where somebody would get hurt from the path. It was always out in open field areas,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and it wasn't anywhere in anybody's neighborhood, so to speak, where we were putting somebody in danger or invading anybody's privacy.
Henry, looking back at this 40 years ago, do you have any comments as to, in terms of Heidi's comment about her concern about...
I totally agree with there being some kind of control, some kind of a point of accountability, some kind of set of rules, what's considered a drone, what areas can or can they be used for whatever reason, what real estate laws pointed for a mineral and sky rights above the property lines. I totally agree that, you know, it is not necessarily an invasion of privacy, but some kind of regulations or some kind of government control, rather than it just being invasive, because we did give respect to other people's privacy, and it was part of the class and the curriculum to have some kind of common sense and not just to do it anywhere, la-di-da.
Very interesting. Henry, thank you very much for your comments. Let me get some comments from my guests before we take, I think we'll have time for one last call. So turn your radio back up, and thank you very much for calling. Any comments, Ed, that you have for Henry?
No, it was just a different time back then.
Yeah.
fewer people.
Yes.
More remote. Better and better. This, you notice, even in his situation, the supervision was in place. Now we just have a different time,
yeah,
a different place.
Yeah. Now we're so crowded. We're so crowded that it's you get on the freeway and you wonder, why am I on the freeway? Frankly, but
a similar experience as a kid. I flew model airplanes and did some model rocketry also. I'd like to point out that we are approaching a million of these unmanned aircraft systems, UAS, mm-hmm. we commonly call drones. We are approaching a million of them in circulation already.
Incredible.
As
Incredible.
Ed pointed out, there's already 500,000 registered or more.
Oh, my. Well, let's take one more call. Carol, welcome to the program.
Fantastic. I have four quick items.
Okay.
Number one, I'm really deeply concerned about drones and their disruption for birds
and such,
because now that they're proliferating, people don't think about how the birds and the insects, the bees even, how they fly, and bats even, and hummingbirds, you know, within their path. That's number one. Mm-hmm. Number two, I'm concerned about their disruption and radio frequencies, because I have a real problem where I live, and in that I can't get NOAA anymore. there's a lot of disruption from
Carol, NOAA is what?
Radio broadcast that tells you about the weather.
I see. Okay.
National Oceanic Administration.
Yes.
Okay.
And the other two things is, how the heck do they get away the situation at Standing Rock? We are told that the FBI have drones up there with stingrays that suck the data out of the cell phones of the water protectors below.
Wow.
That's number one. Number two, we're told that the FBI have been shooting down the people's own drones and those trying to report, which have news drones up in the air trying to report what's happening, and the FBI have been shooting them down. So how the heck do they get away with that?
Carol, we've got to get some answers for you. You had one fourth one. What is it? Very, very quickly, please. We're nearly out of time.
I think that was it.
That was it. Okay. How about any comments, gentlemen, about birds, the insects, bats? Any thoughts about that? Ron, please.
I'll address the FCC, radio frequencies. That's controlled by the FCC, and the FCC does license these. So you'll have to take that up with the FCC. As far as the FBI, I think Ed is being in the federal system might know more about that.
What comments do you have about the FBI, Ed?
Yeah, I would really just need to know a little bit more about that. But I did notice today in preparing for the show that police around the country are using rubber bullets to shoot down drones in appropriate situations. For example, drones coming in too close to a crime scene that's still pending and open and under investigation.
Yeah.
And they might do it for other reasons, too. You know, and to further a law enforcement activity.
Do you have any comments about the birds, the insects, and the bats that Carol brought up?
I'm not sure that I don't know enough because, you know, the only kind of situation I'm familiar with is the propeller, the wind-driven propellers out in California in the Banyan Pass. Mm-hmm. Those do kill a number of birds throughout the years, but I don't know if drones are present a similar problem. It doesn't sound like it to me, but you know, every time you say no, then you learn of some science or other piece of information that might contradict your opinion.
Ron, I know you had some questions. We're nearly out of the time of the program, Joanne.
My experience flying drones is that birds generally tend to stay away from them. They think it's another bird, and they just avoid it. And they're a lot more maneuverable and mobile than the drone is.
I see. Okay. Well, we have just about come to the end of the program. Again, there are two websites, aopa.org and faa.gov, that you might want to go to learn something about more about drones and what you need to be aware of. I want to thank you both very much. It's wonderful to have you on the program. Ed, you came in loud and clear from Florida. Ed Page, certified criminal law trial advocate by the National Board of Trial Advocacy. He's a partner in the Tampa, Florida law firm of Carlton Fields, Jordan & Burt. Thanks, Ed, very much.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Great to have you on the program. And Ron Rohde, I'm sure I'll see you again
for
A Lawyer Night. Ron is a patent attorney, arbitrator for the Better Business Bureau's Lemon Law Disputes. His office is in Palo Alto. Next time on Your Legal Rights, we're getting close to National Veterans Day, and it's nearly here. And so next time on the program, we're going to be discussing consumer protection for veterans and their family members who are targeted for scam, trusts, and annuities. This is a serious problem nationally. My guests will be Shauna Reed, Director of Elder Abuse Prevention, the San Francisco Institute on Aging, Prescott Cole, Staff Attorney, California Advocates for Nursing Home Reform, and Travis Corby, an attorney representing veterans and their family members who have been scammed. Your Legal Rights production staff members are Program Engineer Joanne Marr and Production Assistant Martin McClain. Funding for this segment of Your Legal Rights has been made possible by the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which also funds the public radio satellite transmission of this program for national distribution. Thanks for joining us on Your Legal Rights Public Radio, and please join us next time on your public radio station. I'm Chuck Finney.